I'd apologized to two people now, and I hadn't even been out of the urinal for 10 minutes. Megan wasn't going to be as easy as those first two, though, because deep down I still knew she could get anything she wanted from me. Anything. And that was pretty scary. I got right next to her. It was so hot there in the middle of all those people, and I mean hot, not necessarily hot. Even though Megan, the naughty stewardess, scored an unarguable 5 out of 5 depressurization air masks plus a bonus chicken pot pie on the Ryan Dean West frequent flyer in flight emergency survey. That's like off the scale hot. "Hey," I said.
"Dance," she said.
I've never been shy about dancing. Boys who are shy about dancing look like uncoordinated morons, and girls definitely get turned off by that. So I danced. We got real close, and I held on to Megan's hips, which, now that I think about it, was a huge mistake, because I suddenly forgot everything in the world except for how incredibly hot, and I don't mean thermally hot, she was.
"Megan?"
"What, Ryan Dean?"
"Huh?"
She rubbed her hips square into mine. She began hiking up my little leopard-skin loincloth with the curve of her butt.
"God.
Good thing we were out in the middle of the crowd, 'cause this was the kind of dancing you read about in the papers where schools get burned down by angry crowds of torch-carrying, moonshine-cooking, toothless, one-eyed hillbillies.
I said, "What, Ryan Dean?"
Ryan Dean West 2, think about baseball. Ryan Dean West 1, crap, I don't know a goddamn thing about baseball. Ryan Dean West 2, it's just a figure of speech. Think about a place in the universe where there is no such thing as sex. Ryan Dean West 1,
okay, going to have to give me a hint. Is it Bannock?
Ryan Dean West 2, you're a fucking idiot. Think about your middle name. Ryan Dean West 1,
okay, I hate my middle name.
Ryan Dean West 2,
so do I.
Ryan Dean West 1,
what's my middle name anyway?
I couldn't even remember my middle name.
Do you know what my middle name is, Megan?
No, what is it?
Then I said it.
Mario.
I'll be honest. That actually is my middle name, and saying it helped snap me out of the fact that I was beginning to act like Pedro the Humping Pug Dog right there in front of half the goddamn school. And she said,
"That is the hottest middle name ever,"
which didn't do anything to help slow the boy-to-dog transformation.
"I needed to tell you something," I said.
"Stop dancing for a second." Then she looked serious. We stopped. I pulled my loincloth, which was up over my belly, down. Nobody even noticed. That's how high school dances are these days, in case you didn't know.
"I wanted to say, I'm sorry, Megan."
"Okay, Ryan Dean."
"I really like you, Megan. You're honestly the first girl I ever kissed. I really like you. But I'm in love with Annie. You know that, don't you?" "I broke up with Chaz."
"I know," I said.
"And if it's my fault, I'm sorry for that, too."
"Don't be."
"You are a better person for it, Megan. You are beautiful and brilliant. And nobody who sees that in you ever stopped for a minute to consider how you had beaten all the other girls at Pine Mountain to win the dubious prize of Chaz Becker."
I sounded like William Jennings Bryan giving a speech about crosses and gold and shit. Megan said,
"You should be a lawyer, Ryan Dean."
"Are we okay then, or do you hate me?" I asked.
"We're okay,"
she said. But she looked sad. Then she said,
"I'm in love with you anyway, Ryan Dean."
Ugh, I did not see that coming. I swear, I almost fell down.
"Start dancing," I said.
My voice cracked, but she couldn't hear over the music anyway, so I just felt like a loser. I didn't actually sound like one.
"I'm going to take a little walk. I need to think about things before I screw them up worse than they are."
Megan started dancing.
"Ryan Dean?"
"What?"
Annie sure is lucky,
she said.
You're the best person I know.
I didn't know what to say to that. I felt terrible and amazingly wonderful all at the same time. It sure sounded nicer than adorable. She kept her eyes on me. I felt embarrassed and stupid as I backed away through all the dressed-up dancers. Someone tugged at me from behind. Kevin had switched his hook into his good hand and caught my shoulder strap with it. He was dancing with about 6 girls, and he pulled me into the middle of the circle.
"Isn't this awesome?" he said.
"Have you seen Annie?"
He shrugged. I was dripping with sweat.
"I need to find her,"
I said. Chapter 88. It took me a while to break out of Kevin's girl circle. It was kind of like playing Red Rover, only against 6 hot girls who I didn't mind bumping into over and over until I finally made my way through. As soon as I cleared a path, I ran face first directly into a big blue sea.
"Watch it, puss boy."
For just a second, I was almost touched that Chaz Becker was speaking to me again. I gulped. I had to do it. I was on a mission. I put my hand on his shoulder and pulled his Tyrannosaurus Rex head down to my skinny bitch-ass-sized snack morsel face.
"Chaz, can I talk to you for a second?"
"Before you finally kill me?" God, he looked so ridiculous in that outfit.
"What about?"
Yeah, puss boy forgot what he was doing. Okay, snap out of it.
"I'm sorry for what I did, Chaz. I apologize. A guy should never do the kind of crap I did to you."
I figured this could officially count as an apology for making him drink my pee, too, if I worded it vaguely enough.
"I guess I let things get out of control, and so I apologize. I also said I'm sorry to Megan, and I promise you both it won't happen again, so sorry, Chaz. I know you're probably still going to kill me, but at least I got it off my chest."
Then I put out my hand for him, and he shook it.
"You have balls, Winger. But I still fucking hate you."
"Fair enough."
"I hate you too, Chaz,"
I said, and smiled. Then, beyond Chaz's shoulder at the edge of the dance floor, I caught a glimpse of green surgical scrubs and soft black hair draping over the glint of a stethoscope. It was Annie. She hadn't seen me yet. I moved behind her, stalking her. I put my chin right over her shoulder and whispered, "I know you're probably booked up, but do you think you could squeeze me in for a quick physical?" She turned around suddenly. At first, I thought she was going to slap me, but then she looked shocked and surprised at seeing me, and she gave me that awesome smile where her eyes tear up. And I hate to say it, but just looking at her there kind of made my eyes tear up too.
"Oh my God,"
she said. Then she threw her arms around me, and we hugged like we hadn't seen each other in years. That felt so good, because I was practically naked anyway and all sweaty, and here I was, hugging an out-of-control physician. What could be better than that? Well, except for the quick kiss we stole. Kids get in trouble for kissing at Pine Mountain, so you have to be discreet. The best place to be discreet was out there in the middle of the dance floor. So the wild boy of Bainbridge Island took a tight squeeze on Annie's hand so we wouldn't get separated, and I pulled her out through the crowd and into the deepest, darkest, wildest kiss we ever had.
"How did you get in?"
she said. "They let us out of O'Hall, and I dirty-talked Mr. Wellens into letting us come in." Annie laughed. She put her hands in my hair, and we danced.
"I love what you're wearing,"
she said.
"I am the wild boy of Bainbridge Island," I said.
I lifted up my loincloth. "With Pokemon undies." She laughed and pretended to cover her eyes, but not very convincingly, I noticed. And I said,
"Okay, I showed you mine, now you have to show me yours."
"You are such a pervert, Ryan Dean."
"I think your pug infected me."
We danced until we were both exhausted. When I let her off the floor to get something to drink, I finally remembered that there was one more important thing I had to do, and it wasn't apologizing to Casey Palmer. I would never do that, no matter how many times I made him drink pee.
I bet Shawnee and Isabel haven't moved from that couch all night, I said. Let's go see.
Annie's cheeks were red from dancing. I watched her as she drank lemonade tea.
Wait a second, I said.
I pulled her back so we were face to face. She looked at my eyes, and I knew she was playing that game we had between us. She knew I was doing it, too. I whispered,
You can be in love with me.
She hugged me and put her mouth to my ear and said,
I know.
And I looked at her and said,
Oh, now about that physical doctor.
She pushed my shoulder back.
Shut up.
We held hands and I led her over to the sofa, where I found the Shawnee Gap Isabel arrangement had not changed since I left. Annie and I sat down on the small side of the L so I could sit facing Shawnee with my legs uncrossed. Shawnee nonchalantly flipped me off.
Annie, can you wait here for a few minutes? There's one last thing I have to take care of, I said. What? I want to go get JP and make him come to the dance before it's over.
I don't know if you should. He's pretty pissed, Ryan Dean, Shawnee said.
It's okay, I said. One more try.
I rubbed Annie's knee and kissed her cheek, quick, so no one would notice. And don't let Shawnee try to get you to play the want-to-see-what's-under-the-raincoat game.
Oh, he already did that,
she said, and rolled her eyes. Chapter 89 The cold air felt good on my sweating skin, but only for about half a minute. That's when I started shivering. Then I decided I should run to the boys' dorm. In the dark, I saw the black and white stripes of what could only have been Joey walking down the trail ahead of me like he was going home to O'Hall, and I could just tell by the way he was moving that he was pissed off about something. I called out, Hey, Joe! He stopped and turned. I could see his shoulders relax a bit.
What's up?
I said.
I'm going home.
I walked over to where he stood.
I found Annie in there,
I said.
I saw you dancing. You guys look great together. It's about fucking time, Ryan Dean.
Is everything okay? Joey said.
I'll tell you about it later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, something happened.
I knew Joey would tell me about it later and that it was probably something ridiculous, too. Casey Palmer was on a tirade, no doubt. The asshole just wasn't going to let things go.
Where are you going? He asked.
I'm going to try to get JP to come out to the dance before they send us home, I said. He's in his room pouting. I can try at least.
Well, I'll see you later then, Joey said.
You sure everything's okay?
He sighed.
Something was wrong.
Ryan Dean, I figure that between you, Kevin, and Annie, I have about 3 real friends here. So thanks for that.
You're my best friend, Joe, I said, and he smiled.
Hey, do you ever listen to The Who?
Do I look like I'm 50?
My dad loves them. Sometimes he walks around with his shirt off, singing, acting like he's Roger Daltrey, but he's so my dad, and he looks like a scrawny lawyer from Boston, I said. Anyway, they have this song he always sings, How Many Friends. Ever hear it?
No.
I have an iPod. Want to listen to it?
You have an iPod? Joey said. He looked intrigued, but at the same time, he kind of knew I was playing a joke on him.
Yep. Okay.
I put my hand inside my loincloth. Man, it felt like a frozen leg of lamb going down there against my skin. I dug around, then pulled my hand up and held my closed fist out for Joey.
Here,
I said. He held out his hand, and I put, of course, nothing in it. Then I said,
Here, you need the earbuds.
And I proceeded to put nothing into each of his ears with the tips of my freezing thumbs.
Is it loud enough?
I said.
No. Retard, you didn't even touch play. Don't you even know how to use a fucking iPod?
And yes, I apologize. I really did say that. Joey looked kind of shocked, too, but I knew he needed a little magic. Joey pressed his index finger down into his empty palm. I windmilled my arm like I was Pete Townsend slashing a guitar. And yeah, I'm a rugby player. We sing and we're not uptight about it. So I jumped up in the air and gave my best howling impersonation of my scrawny Boston lawyer dad, imitating Roger Daltrey. Joey squinted a cautious look at me and shrugged. And I sang, "How many friends have I really got that love me, that want me, that'll take me as I am?" I heard someone out in the dark scream, "Shut the fuck up, Ryan Dean!" "Okay, that's it. I'm not singing anymore," I said. "Now give me back my iPod before we get in trouble." Joey smiled and shook his head. I said, "Dude, high five." We slapped hands. Truly our all-time gay straight high five record setter. "Oh, one more thing," I said. "Chest bumps." Then we jumped up and bumped chests, and I started laughing so hard. Joey, that was the gayest thing I ever did. Well, except for the time I wrote a poem to Shawnee. That made Joey laugh. Just a little, though. "Damn," I said. "I'm freezing my nuts off. I better go get JP before they shut it down." "I'll see you later," Joey said. We shook hands, and Joey put his hand on my shoulder. "Thanks, Ryan Dean." "I mean this in such a completely and totally non-gay way, Joey. But I love you," I said. "Shut the fuck up, Ryan Dean." I laughed. Joey went off to O'Hall, and I ran on frozen bare legs for the boys' dorm where I used to live. Chapter 90. It was weird being back in the boys' dorm after so long. It all looked so nice and normal, like a resort hotel compared with the linoleum, cement, rough wood lack of heating of O'Hall. But it was kind of the same way I felt that night when I sat down with the freshmen having dinner. I could make a case that I belonged here, but I knew I really didn't. Not much of an overlap anymore, I guess. Shawnee and JP's room was on the second floor. There was an elevator, too. Weird. I knocked. "JP?" I knocked again. I heard his voice through the door. "Come in." I opened the door. He knew it was me. I guess he recognized my voice. He didn't even move his eyes when I came in. JP was lying down on the couch watching television. That's how these dorm rooms were. Everyone had his own private bedroom, and two or three of them would connect to a common living room and a bathroom. So it was a lot more private and a lot more like living at home than the prison-like atmosphere of O'Hall's barracks. He was alone, but he had taken the time to put a costume on, which meant he was at least thinking about going out. Typical JP, his face was blacked, which was a good cover for the massive purple bruise around his eye, and he was dressed in combat fatigues with a camouflaged bucket hat that shaded his eyes. "Hey." I sat down on a red chair across from him. "They let O'Hall go to the dance." "You look like a gay caveman," JP said. "Well, that wasn't quite the effect I was going for." "Dude, you have Pokemon underwear on." "Damn, that crossing the legs requirement. Cool, huh?" JP inhaled and raised his eyebrows, a silent whatever. "JP, I'm going to say it one more time, and then I'm going to shut up," I said. "Or you could shut up now," he said. I swallowed. "No. I'm sorry for being such a dick. I'm sorry I started those fights with you. You should have kicked my ass, and I can't blame you if you're still planning on doing it. But I came to take you to the dance." "You really are a gay caveman," I laughed. "We're having a lot of fun there." "Even Shawnee and Isabel?" "Well, okay, I'll be honest, not them. They're total losers, but everyone else is." He sort of smiled. "So put your shoes on." I stood up and held my hand out to him. He grabbed it, and I pulled him up so he was sitting with his feet on the floor. "Sorry," I said again. "Okay," he said. He put his feet into his army boots and began lacing them up. "I'm sorry too, Ryan Dean.
I really was going for her, you know. I never thought she'd be interested in you.
Maybe I was still a little sensitive about the whole JP thing, but hearing him say that really did sting a little.
Why'd you think that?
JP shrugged.
'Cause you're just a kid.
Screw that, JP.
I know, I'm such a loser, but I was so sick of that crap, I almost felt myself getting ready to fight him again.
Hey, you won. It doesn't matter, JP said.
Does it?
He tied his bootlaces and stood. I took a deep breath and tried to make myself believe that it didn't really matter.
I guess not. Come on, let's go. There's still an hour until 10. Maybe you can at least get Isabel to dance with you.
Dude, she has more facial hair than Shawnee.
I think she's kind of hot, I said.
And anyway, Shawnee never dances, so you'll have to settle for fuzzy Isabel. We shook hands again before we left, but it was an uneasy kind of peace between JP and me. He was an intense guy, and I couldn't expect him to just forget about everything. And I even asked him straight out when we stepped outside into the cold on our walk over to the dance.
JP, do you think we'll be friends again?
And he said, without even thinking about it,
no.
At least he was honest. At least I could hope we'd stop fighting. Mr. Wellens looked drunk, and he waved JP toward the door with an emotional, John Paul, where have you been? JP just shrugged and said,
homework.
But before we went inside, JP stopped me and said,
Ryan Dean, I'm going to tell you something that I don't really care if you know or not, and it's probably the nicest thing I'll ever do for you. You know the other day when you and Annie came back from Seattle on Sunday?
Yeah.
You remember how you saw Annie giving me a hug?
I remembered that, and I thought, what's he trying to do? Start a fight right here in front of everyone?
Yeah.
Well, right before that, she just told me that she couldn't come to the dance with me. That's why I didn't come tonight. She backed out on me. She felt bad, so she hugged me while you were over there talking to Shawnee. She told me that she couldn't come to the dance with me because she was so fucking in love with Ryan Dean West.
She told you that?
I asked.
On Sunday?
She started crying about it.
Then I really felt confused. That was the same day when she told me not to kiss her, when I went crazy on our run. And then she admitted it to JP before she ever got close to telling me. Maybe she wanted to see if she could fight it. Maybe she wanted to wait for me to break down and say it first, like it wasn't so goddamned obvious anyway. And then, the next day, I got in that fight with JP and busted his face, and it was all over nothing, really, now that I heard what Annie had said. I felt like dog shit.
Why didn't you tell me?
When we were running at the lake, you could have said something, I said.
You wouldn't shut up, JP said. All that crap about you and Annie running around naked or whatever the hell you were talking about? It was sickening. And then when you pushed Shawnee, I was ready to go. And I would have fucked you up if my foot didn't slip and Shawnee didn't get his dumb ass in between us like that. I would have fucked you up.
I didn't say anything after that. I felt like such an idiot.
We went into the dance. And I knew John Paul Thoreau and I really weren't ever going to be friends again.
Chapter 91.
I may not have succeeded, but I did what I needed to do. At least I tried to make things right with the victims of the wild boy. JP came to the dance, and yeah, it was awkward. He didn't say anything, or dance, or anything. He just sat on the sofa between Shawnee and Isabel while Annie and I danced until the lights came on, and they told us all to go home. I didn't see anyone from O'Hall then, but I volunteered to walk Annie and Isabel back to the girls' dorm, so I let Shawnee off a serious hook, because I knew he was dreading how exactly to go about saying goodnight to his date. And he had the guts to call me perma-virgin. I was pretty sure the only female lips Sean Russell Flaherty had ever touched besides his mom's were flickering images on a computer monitor. Isabel walked about 10 feet in front of us, but she'd turn around every few paces to make sure we were still there. Annie had her arm around my shoulders because I was so cold, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't the only reason. I put my mouth next to her ear and whispered,
"You told JP you were in love with me before I said it to you. It doesn't count if you tell someone else."
She smiled.
"Yes, it does." "Okay, then. In that case, you told Joey you were in love with me way before I said anything to JP."
Then she laughed. Wow, she totally kicked my ass.
"Joey told you that?"
I said. She just smiled. "Of course he did."
"Okay, you got me,"
I said. I kissed her.
"I love you, Annie. I love you, Ryan Dean."
"Hey, Isabel." Isabel stopped and turned around, and I said, "When was the very first time Annie told you that she..." But Annie covered my mouth with her hand before I could ask the whole question. So I stuck my tongue out and licked her fingers all over, and she squealed and laughed and ran up to Isabel, whispering something urgent to her roommate. Chapter 92. When I got back to O'Hall, everything seemed weird, like I was walking into the last 5 minutes of a horror movie. That's about the only way to describe it. It was totally dark and quiet, no lights in any of the windows. I thought that either everyone had come back and they were all asleep, or nobody had come back yet and I was there entirely alone. I walked up the 3 steps to the landing and slipped my shoes off. I guess I didn't need to go barefoot because it wasn't like I was technically sneaking in, but it was just so eerily quiet that I didn't want to make any noise on my way upstairs. Things got stranger inside the mudroom. The door onto the lower floor was standing wide open, and there were all kinds of muddy shoe prints going in and out, like the place had been raided by an army of guys wearing athletic shoes. I could tell they weren't the kinds of shoes that Mr. Farrow would wear, and definitely not Mrs. Singer. So I knew the tracks had to have been made by some of the guys from upstairs. So I was kind of relieved that I was carrying my shoes, because I could just imagine the morning's shoe investigation from a very pissed-off pair of resident counselors. I took a step inside the girl's floor. My feet sloshed in a puddle of cold water on the linoleum. I was pretty creeped out by this point, and I kept wondering where the hell Mrs. Singer was. She was gone. I could tell the bathroom door was open, too, and I could just faintly hear the sound of water splashing, like the guys had been in the girls' floor showers and not turned them off all the way. I decided right then I was not going to take another step further into the hallway, and just then I heard a couple screams like wildcats out in the woods, very distant, but the kind of sound that you just hate to hear in the middle of a quiet and spooky night, when you're all alone. That was enough for me. I turned around and went upstairs without shutting the door and without so much as glancing behind me even one time. Upstairs was like a tomb. I walked the length of the hallway, quietly wishing someone would pop out from a room to go to the bathroom or something, even if it was that asshole Casey Palmer. But there were no sounds at all. I kicked an empty whiskey bottle, and it clinked along the floor. It sounded like 100 xylophones inside a stone tomb. Someone fucked up. There were footsteps on the staircase. This was it, I thought. I was about to be murdered. Casey Palmer appeared at the top of the stairwell. He had abandoned the Wonder Woman outfit and was dressed in sweats. His skin was slick with sweat, and his eyes were drunken and glazed.
"What happened, Casey?"
I said. I tried to sound as nice as I could because, I'll be honest, I was afraid of the way Casey Palmer was looking at me. Casey ignored me. He walked past me, kind of floating like a ghost in the dark. He smelled like sweat and whiskey and puke all at the same time. He stopped and swiped his hand at me to grab me, but I slipped away from him. Casey stumbled and nearly fell down. He said,
"I'll fucking kill you if you ever say anything to me again, kid."
Then Casey slipped inside his room and shut the door. When I got to my room, I actually began wishing that Chaz would be in there. I opened the door, At first, all I could see were the red numbers on our alarm clock. I bent forward and looked into the lower bunk. Chaz was there, asleep. I actually breathed a relieved gasp at seeing him. I leaned over him just to make sure he was really there.
"What the fuck are you doing, homo?" he said.
"Yeah, good night to you too, bitch."
"I'm sorry, I was creeped out. It's like nobody's here, and it looks like someone trashed the girl's floor or something."
I was shivering, mostly from the cold. I took off my costume and slipped on some boxer shorts and a sweatshirt. I debated whether or not to go to the bathroom to brush my teeth. I grabbed my toothbrush and stuff, but I was still spooked out about the way things felt out there.
"I don't know what the fuck's going on," Chaz said. "I've been trying to sleep for a while, and I don't think Pharaoh or that bitch downstairs is even here. Because about an hour ago there was all this running around and slamming shit around until I stuck my head out in the hall and told them to quiet the fuck down."
I decided to skip the dental hygiene. Something was definitely not right out there, and I wasn't going to get caught up in it. I climbed up in my bunk and lay there, trying to stay awake and see if I would hear that howling again. But I fell asleep. Part 4. Words. Okay. Let's call this an intermission. With a bit of an apology, I guess. You ever hear of Joseph Conrad? He said, "One writes half the book, the other half is with the reader." Mr. Wellens might say that I have made you a conscripted audience, that I didn't give you a choice as to whether or not to believe me, and believe me, sometimes I can't believe myself. Or something. But I wrote this all down, and I tried to make everything the exact same way it did when I was seeing it and feeling it, real time. With all the confusion, the pressure, and the wonder, too. Even though I did get off the page once in a while and make jabs at things, which is kind of like the cartoonist drawing a cartoon of himself while he's drawing himself. But you can't blame a kid for wanting to do that, can you? Oh, and don't even ask me about all the stuff I crossed out. It's really embarrassing. But through everything, I think what strikes me most is how a guy can be going along, sailing on a particular course, even if it sucks. And he'll think everything is so steady and predictable, and then bam, someone steps on his balls, or he gets into an uncontrollable fist fight with one of his best friends. Or even worse things than that. And you can't see around corners, so you just have to deal with it and try to stay afloat. And things get tough. And you're supposed to grow up. And it's all a bunch of bullshit. Sorry. After midnight. Just words. No more pictures. No charts, or plays, or poems. Now it's just about the words. Friday morning. The creepiest nights seem to evaporate into nothing once the sun comes up and you can hear the sounds of guys out in the hallway talking crap to each other and play fighting while they get ready for school. So, I hardly gave another thought to how scared I had been when I came home from the dance, and I didn't really even want to ask any of the other boys what had gone on in the dorm before I got back to O'Hall. Routine has a way of making you feel like an idiot after you've gotten all worked up over things not being in their expected order. So I showered and got into my uniform, just like I do on any other morning. We ran in conditioning class. JP still wasn't talking to me, but I had a feeling that things were just okay and nothing better than that between us. And when Shawnee and I spoke, I was careful to not be such a smartass and say things just to pick at JP again. But Joey didn't show up that day for calculus. I remembered how pissed off he seemed the night before, and since it was Friday and all, I just figured he was taking a day off and going home early. Still, I mostly hoped I'd be able to talk to him again before he left,
so I could find out what he was so bugged about when I saw him outside the dance. Then it really sank in that it was Friday. It meant Annie and just about everyone else would be leaving for home, too. And I wished I didn't feel so goddamn scared and alone without my friends around. When Megan saw me in class, she smiled and said, "I like how you dance, Ryan Dean. Pretty hot." I turned red. "Sorry about that. We were kind of getting a little nasty, Megan." She laughed, whispered, "A little? Hey, did you see Joey? Or hear if he's sick or something?" "No. I saw Kevin this morning, though," she said. "You should ask him." "Okay. And thanks for the dance, Megan. I had a lot of fun."
She turned around and rubbed my forearm and winked at me. Ah, she made me feel so weak. Lit class. I didn't normally run into Kevin at school, but I looked for him everywhere that day after Halloween. Eventually, I just quit trying. I knew I'd see him at lunchtime when he and the others left for their weekends at home. Somehow I'd managed to scrawl out my "Nick and Bill are gay for each other" essay for Mr. Wellens, and he practically salivated when I handed it in to him at the start of lit class. What a moron. What a criminal waste of a blue book, too. I sat down. Annie smiled, but JP didn't even turn to look at me. I wished he'd just get up and change seats and leave us both alone. After all, I did what I could. I screwed up and got into a fight with a guy who was one of my best friends. And I knew JP was going to pout like this for the rest of the year, maybe the rest of high school entirely. Then, Mr. Wellens began talking about Halloween costumes and how they were manifestations of suppressed sexuality, and he started blah blah blahing about every goddamned kid in the class and how he took notes on all of us at the dance last night, and Ryan Dean West was in touch with his atavistic and primal man drives, and, oh, let's go around the room and talk about our Hemingway essays. So yeah, Annie and I pretty much shut it all out, scooted our desks close together, held hands on my lap, score one for atavism, and whispered and mouthed our own unobserved conversation. And all the while, I was praying that old pervert didn't call on his favorite caveman to out poor Nick Adams and his best friend. "I had so much fun last night," I said.
"So did I. You're a great dancer."
"Shut up." I rolled my eyes and squeezed her fingers.
"It's going to be so boring here this weekend. Ask your mom and dad about Thanksgiving. I really want to go. I know they'll want you to come. It'll be so great, Ryan Dean. It's just a few weeks away. It'll seem like forever. I'm going to go crazy this weekend without you."
She leaned closer and looked right into my eyes with that amazing look she had. I know we would have kissed if we hadn't been sitting right there in a classroom. JP coughed and gave us a quick, dirty look and scooted his desk farther away from Annie's. "Good."
"Who are you going to the airport with?" I asked. "Kevin's driving, with one arm, and Megan and Joey," she said. "Chaz isn't coming, so you won't be totally alone, Ryan Dean. Think of all the fun you two boys will have together."
She laughed quietly. "Crap.
Have you seen Joey today? He wasn't in calc or econ. He'll meet us at lunchtime. I'll walk you out when you leave."
"Okay."
Which brings us to young Mr. West, Mr. Wellens announced, snapping Annie and me out of our mid-class dream. He went on, "Ryan Dean has a particularly interesting theory on sexual tension that is quietly hinted at, like an urgent whisper by Hemingway in The Three-Day Blow." Ugh. The class weakly attempted stifling their laughter. All this crap just to get into a stupid Halloween dance. And by the way, what did he mean with that young Mr. West comment? I was so sick of that crap, and I even got it from perverted old professors.
"Please elucidate, Ryan Dean,"
Mr. Wellens said.
"Oh, please do, young Mr. West,"
JP whispered mockingly from the other side of Annie's desk, without turning to look at me.
Crap. Lunchtime. By the end of class, I started getting pretty depressed, thinking about Annie going home for the weekend. When I saw her at the start of lunch, carrying her suitcase out to the parking lot, I imagined myself throwing my body in front of Kevin's car, kicking and screaming to stop her. She waited at the gate for me, standing with Kevin and Megan. I couldn't see Joey anywhere. I grabbed the suitcase from her hand so I could carry it for her. I took Kevin's from him, too. He said, "Thanks, Ryan Dean." "Any of you seen Joey?" The girls both looked at Kevin, who shook his head, and said, "He didn't come home last night. I was hoping maybe you'd know what happened." Kevin looked worried. That's when I got kind of scared. "No one knows where he is," Kevin said. "I went and checked at the office, too, because his car is still here." I looked out at the lot. Joey's BMW was parked next to Kevin's car like it always was. "What?" I said. I couldn't believe it. "I saw him leaving the dance."
"I didn't see him all night," Kevin said. "Once I started dancing, I never saw him after that. They called his parents. They think he ran away or something. He did it before, remember? The cops are going to come."
I did remember the time Joey ran away from school for 3 days, but he didn't have a car then. Why wouldn't he just drive away this time? We started walking out to Kevin's car. Kevin said,
"He got into a fight or some shit with Casey and Nick. Some of the guys on the team got between them or there would have been a fucking riot at the dance. Nobody even noticed."
"Are you just going to leave anyway?" I said.
"What else can I do? Joey's a big boy. He's almost 18, Ryan Dean. He's done this before, and I haven't gone home in 3 weeks," Kevin said. "Joey'll be okay. He's just pissed about something. Again, no big deal. The boys will cool off, and everything will be back to its old shitty O'Hall self."
"He looked pissed off last night," I said.
"Nick and Casey got drunk," Kevin said. "Shit-faced. They fucked the place up, and nobody knew anything about it. Those fuckers stayed up all night cleaning the mess up. Pharaoh and the old woman downstairs never knew shit about what those guys did while they were gone on their little Halloween binge."
"Something's not right," I said.
"You worry too much, Winger."
We loaded the suitcases into Kevin's car, and I walked over to Annie's door. I hugged her, and we kissed before she got in. "I'm going to miss you," I whispered. "I love you." She looked like she was about to cry, and in a weird way that made me feel really good. I closed her door and Kevin started the car. He said,
"Tell Joey to call my house when he shows up. He'll be back today. I know Joey. Just watch."
"Okay," I said.
"Well, I'm going to check with the office again." "It's going to be okay, Ryan Dean. I'll see you on Sunday."
I looked back at Annie and said,
"Bye. See you, Kevin. Megan."
And I stood there beside Joey's car and watched them drive away. Friday afternoon. It wasn't okay. The police came before the end of lunch. I was summoned to the headmaster's office. I had to tell them about seeing Joey when he left the dance, and how he looked upset, but he wouldn't say why, and who the guys were from O'Hall that went along with us. The officers listened. They wrote it all down. But I didn't tell them everything. How could I tell them everything? At first, the policeman who talked to me seemed kind of nice and concerned about Joey, and he knew about how Joey had run away before. He told me that if Joey didn't show up, they were going to search the campus and the woods in the morning. Then the officer who interviewed me asked if I knew Joey was gay. And when I told him yes, he asked flat out if I was gay, or if I knew if Joey had a lover or not. And that just pissed me off so bad I wanted to cuss, but I didn't. I shut up. I told him he should go talk to someone else. Stupid fucking bastard. O'Hall that night. Joey never showed up.
Something was wrong, and I knew it. I could feel it jangling my nerves like the sound of the empty whiskey bottle I'd kicked when I walked the hallway in the dark the night before. I got back to O'Hall at about 4 o'clock that afternoon. The place was quiet and empty, which was typical for a Friday afternoon. Downstairs, everything had been cleaned up from the night before, but I was still sick from that lingering feeling you just can't shake after waking up from a terrible nightmare, remembering the muddy shoe prints, the water on the floor, the shower running in the bathroom, and those weird sounds I'd heard coming from the woods. But it wasn't a dream. Kevin Cantrell knew that. He knew enough about O'Hall and the boys we lived with, though, so it was no big deal to Kevin. I could not make it not a big deal. I was stressed out and in a bad mood from everything that had happened, and I wished I didn't feel so alone, that Annie could be there with me. As I passed by the downstairs hall door, I decided to go for a run before dinner. I froze when I saw Mrs. Singer watching me from the other side of the door. I wasn't about to open it, but somehow she didn't scare me as much as she used to. I still wouldn't look at her face, though. I just watched the doorknob and listened to see if she was going to come out. She didn't. I went up to my room and changed out of my clothes and into my running things. I didn't go all the way up to Buzzard's Roost. It was getting too dark, and I had to turn back. But I stopped at Stonehenge and sat down for a while on that same fallen tree where I'd sat so many times with Annie Altman. I missed her so much. Even though she'd only been gone for a few hours, it felt like I'd never see her again. I walked the wishing circle. That night, Chaz and I watched television with Mr. Farrow. Awkward. It was like sitting in a sauna naked together. We were the only ones left in O'Hall, but we didn't say anything to him or to each other. I could tell Mr. Farrow was uncomfortable around me, though, and I probably would have thought it was funnier if I could only get rid of the creepy feeling that I hadn't been able to shake since the day before. So later, when we were lying in bed, I was so frustrated and sick of the silence that I actually broke down and started talking to Chaz Becker. "So, did you break up with Megan, or was it the other way around?" I heard Chaz exhale and roll over. He didn't say anything for about a minute, and then finally, "Why do you fucking care?" "'Cause I can't stand how quiet it's been." "She broke up with me. So go for it, little puss boy."
"I already told you about that, Chaz," I said.
"I'm sorry. Me and Megan aren't doing anything."
I folded my hands behind my head and sighed.
"Did the cops come and talk to you?"
"Yeah."
"What did you say?"
Chaz grunted. "What could I say? That we drink booze and play poker and do crazy shit? That maybe Joey's just doing some stupid consequence or something? I don't know anything about Joey. He just ran away."
"Yeah. I hope he's okay. I hope he comes back."
"I always thought you guys seemed a little gay for each other," Chaz said. I wanted to say, "Ask your girlfriend how gay I am, bitch," but I'd had enough fighting for a while.
"You're an..."
But I stopped myself because I didn't want to cuss at him.
"That's messed up, Chaz. Can't Joey have any friends without it being about that? Aren't you his friend, too?"
"Me?" Chaz said. "I don't have any fucking friends."
Go figure. At least he was smart enough to know that much. Chaz Becker really was a genius when it came to knowing how pathetic he was.
7 in the morning. I woke up at 7. When I climbed down from the top bunk, Chaz rolled over and said, "What the fuck? It's Saturday, dipshit." I wanted to kick him in the head so bad.
"I know. I just don't want to stay in bed."
Chaz rolled toward the wall and put the pillow over his face. I pulled on my warm-ups and slipped my feet into my running shoes. I went outside into a cold drizzle. It felt like it was going to snow, and the clouds hung down so low and white that I couldn't even see the tops of the trees around me. It looked like there was a pillow over the face of the world. I headed for the mess hall. Weekends were kind of fend-for-yourself eating arrangements at Pine Mountain. There was always plenty of self-contained microwavable stuff left in the coolers for the kids who stayed, but there was no real food at PM, and there were no people to serve it either. But before I got to eat my breakfast, I saw what looked like about 100 police officers, park rangers, and school staff all gathered around the front gates to the school. Now they were really looking for Joey. I went back to O'Hall. Chaz Becker was not pleased when I pulled the covers off his face and actually touched his bare arm, shaking him.
"Wake up, Chaz."
"You are a total fag, Pusswing. You do realize you are touching me, right?"
"They're doing a search for Joey, in the woods. Get your fucking ass out of bed and let's help look for our captain."
I fought the urge to shut my eyes. I guessed it would hurt just as bad if Chaz knocked my teeth in whether I watched him do it or not. But he just took a deep breath, rubbed his eyes, and sat up. When he put his bare feet down on the floor, he looked around our room in the foggy light and said,
"It's fucking cold."
"Yeah." He held his hand out so I could help pull him to his feet. Chaz stripped and got into some thermals and sweats, gloves, and a hat. He looked like he was ready to go snowshoeing, and I have to admit I wished I had more layers on, too. At least I'd stuffed a couple microwave breakfast sandwiches into my pockets. They were still warm, so I kind of hated giving one up for Chaz when he stepped outside and into the drizzle. They tasted nasty, but Chaz thanked me for bringing him breakfast in bed, even if, according to his understanding of the universe, it only proved how much of a homo I was. We knew the places to look, anyway. There was a big drainage culvert halfway between O'Hall and the highway to Bannock. It was where the O'Hall boys sometimes went to smoke weed or cigarettes with their friends, or if they were alone, to jerk off to some nasty old porn mags everyone seemed to leave there. Nobody was there. Chaz took a piss against the side of the drain pipe and asked if I had any cigarettes or chew. I shook my head. He said,
"Yeah, I didn't think so."
"You really think I'm a pussy, don't you?" Chaz stared at me, unblinking, like a rhino or something equally terrifying, standing 3 feet away from me while he tucked his dick back into his thermals and said,
"Fuck, you? You're about the most unpussy sack of shit winger I've ever seen on a rugby pitch in my fucking life. I think half your scrawny ass weight must be taken up by balls, winger."
I nodded. I wished I had a cigarette to give him after that. We followed the lake around towards Stonehenge. It started to snow, a wet Pacific Northwest snow that fell in clumps, soaking and unpleasant. We ran into 2 Forest Service rangers near Stonehenge. They got excited when they saw us and took out the photocopied pictures they'd been carrying of Joey's school ID, holding the images between their eyes and us like they were some kind of prism that could sort out and break up the bullshit from the truth. Nothing. But we kept looking. Saturday afternoon. They found Joey in the woods, not far from O'Hall, at about 3 o'clock that afternoon. He was tied to a tree, stripped naked, and had been beaten to death. Later. I need to vent, but I can't. The words won't come. Playing the game. I'll be honest, I didn't cry. I didn't even say anything at all, because I didn't want to hear it, so I just didn't talk to anyone anymore. Annie and I would walk together. Sometimes we would go to the wishing circle, and I'd always hold her hand. When I needed to, I would whisper to her. She was the only one. But I stopped talking after Joey died. I was too afraid. My parents tried to take me out of Pine Mountain. They said I needed help. I sent them a letter so they'd know I would be okay, and in it I wrote that taking me away from Annie would kill me. So after 2 weeks, Annie's mother and father came to Pine Mountain so they could see me. Doc Dad watched me play rugby, I gave him the Pine Mountain RFC shirt he wanted, but I didn't talk to him. He shook my hand, and I could tell he was happy to see me, but I couldn't look him in the eyes, because I knew they'd look like hurt, and I wasn't going to cry in front of anyone. I swear to God, when I played, sometimes I would see Joey out there leading the back line, but it was always someone else. During our game, I could hear Doc Dad on the sidelines cheering. He enjoyed the game. It made me feel good. I liked Annie's father. Doc Mom came to see me, alone, in my room. We didn't say anything, and it was dark. The window was covered. I sat on my bed, and she sat across from me in a chair. It was like that for 20 minutes, just dark, nothing. Then she stood up and sat beside me on my bed, and she put her arm around my shoulders, and I began talking. I told her about my iPod, and how I sang for Joey the last time I ever saw him. After a while, she said, "Anyone in the world would be so lucky to call you their friend, Ryan Dean." I told her about how Joey always stuck up for anyone, even people he didn't like. And I told her the story about how Chaz made me drink beer the night before school started. I told her about how we drank whiskey, too, before Halloween, and I'd peed in Chaz's and Casey's drinks that night when Joey drove us into Bannock to get costumes, and we lost Chaz but picked up Screaming Ned. And telling that story made me smile, but it hurt so much. So when I was finished talking about Joey, Doc Mom said, "Okay, Ryan Dean, I am not a therapist anymore. Now I'm just a mom." Then she squeezed me so tight, and she kissed my head and said, "I am so sorry, baby. I am so sorry." And we both cried for I don't know how long. Annie waited outside. But when I was finished with my crying, I told Doc Mom that I couldn't go out. "I don't want anyone to know I was crying," I said. Doc Mom said, "Okay, Ryan Dean, I'll wait as long as you want me to." "I'll be okay, Doc Mom." In the boys' dorm. On the day they found Joey, the police sealed off O Hall, and we never went back there again. Never. They talked to Chaz and me for hours, separately. I told them almost everything, but not the stuff I didn't think would matter. They didn't ask anyway. Casey Palmer and Nick Matthews killed Joey that night of the dance. They got drunk. They were mad. They beat him until he stopped being Joey. I loved Joey Cosentino. After I told the police what I knew about Casey, they went to his home. Casey Palmer and Nick Matthews never came back to school. I heard they both confessed right away, and I figured it was because Casey didn't want it coming out in his trial about how he'd been chasing after Joey for so long. That's what I think, but I could be wrong. Either way, I didn't care about Casey's reasoning. Pine Mountain closed down O Hall. None of us ever saw Mr. Farrow or Mrs. Singer again. They were gone, cut loose. Nobody needed them, and nobody needed anything like O Hall again, either. I'll be honest, I was actually sad about them closing down O Hall, as weird as that sounds. I wished I could go back to the noise and the smell, the crowded and dirty bathroom. They moved me and Kevin and Chaz in together at the boys' dorm, each of us with our private bedroom and the big living room where we'd sometimes fight over what to watch on our television. We talked about it once, much later, and we decided that we were all better suited to live in O Hall. So I told Kevin and Chaz that I was going to do my best to get them to reopen it, and then I'd do something bad so they would have to send me there for my senior year. Chaz said, "You're a fucking idiot, Winger." "Yeah, I know." Chaz Becker and I became friends. He didn't turn me into an asshole, and I didn't teach him how to draw comics. It was a balanced relationship, but a weird one. Wingers and forwards are not allowed to be friends. But Chaz and I needed each other. He picked on me, that was to be expected. Kevin Cantrell, like always, was the calming peacemaker in our new three-man family. We played poker on Sundays. We invited Shawnee Flaherty and J.P. Thoreau to the games. There were no more consequences. How could you top the magnificent shit we had done in Ohio? Who could ever make anything worse? The thing about rugby is this. You can hate a guy off the pitch who will save your fucking balls on the pitch when you play on the same side. There is nothing more glorious than that. One time in the boys' dorm while we were playing a game of Hold'em, I made J.P. Thoreau laugh. I thought, when we are seniors, me and J.P. are going to be cool again. Thanksgiving. This time, I remember to take off my belt before I walk through the metal detector at the airport, so I avoid the humiliation of a second strip search from Officer Nutgrabber. What happened to Joey messed me up worse than anything I ever had to recover from. And I'll be honest, it scared me to leave Pine Mountain, even if it did mean spending 4 days with Annie. I couldn't sleep those nights before Thanksgiving came. As ridiculous as it sounds, I kept thinking something terrible would happen if I left Kevin and Chaz. But I knew I was being stupid, and that I had to do something to make myself get over being afraid if I was ever going to grow up and get better. After all, I was supposedly on a mission to do just that, to reinvent Ryan Dean West in my junior year at Pine Mountain Academy. Well, fuck that. We hold hands for the entire flight. I point out the window, grinning, and say, "Remember?" I kiss her when we cross the Columbia River, and Annie smiles and says, "You are such a pervert." I imagine that there will never be a moment in my life when I am not in love with Annie Altman. Being back on Bainbridge Island is almost like filling my lungs up with the same air again, the air that smells so green and thick with the ocean. We walk out on the beach in the freezing and damp cold of the evening. Her parents watch us go, standing in the open doorway. But they leave us alone. "I'm going to get better, Annie. First thing tomorrow, we're going for a run, even if it's raining. You can tear your clothes off if you feel like it, and we'll jump in the hot tub when we're done." "You're asking for the wild boy to return, you know." And Annie laughs and takes off running down the beach. I chase after her, but she lets me catch her too easily, and we kiss right there as her parents watch us. I know it's kind of ridiculous, but I realize now how wrong that old pervert Mr. Wellens is. Almost nothing at all is ever about sex, unless you never grow up, that is. It's about love, and maybe not having it. What an old delusional idiot he is. But what do I know? I'm just 14. Quiet time. I'll say it now. I didn't talk for those weeks because I was afraid of the words. The words came together and said how Joey died, alone and scared. And he never did anything bad to anyone. Ever. But when I was quiet, I could hold on to Annie's hand, and that was a word that didn't need to be spoken. And Doc Mom, sitting with her arm around me and listening and crying, that made words, too. The same words that make the horrible things come also tell the quieter things about love. I found out something about words. There are plenty of words I can put on paper, words I can see with my eyes and scribble with my hand, that I never had the guts to say with my mouth. Sometimes I used to think I was brave, but I don't believe that anymore. And then it's always that one word that makes you so different and puts you outside the overlap of everyone else. And that word is so fucking big and loud, it's the only thing anyone ever hears when your name is spoken. And whenever that happens to us, all the other words that make us the same disappear in its shadow. Okay. I got it out. Time to be quiet. I can breathe again.
This has been an Audible Inc. production of Winger. Written by Andrew Smith. Narrated by Mark Boyette. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2013 by Andrew Smith. Production copyright 2013 by Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.